You're listening to SBS News.
It was only months after she was crowned Queen of the United Kingdom that Her Majesty first set foot on Australian soil, visiting one of the 54 countries that make up the Commonwealth. It was February 1954. She was only 27 and became the first reigning monarch to visit the land down under, accompanied by her husband, Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh. The trip keenly anticipated by millions of Australians.
From early morning, the Queen and the Duke, aboard the Gothic, had responded to the cheers of welcome. But now they prepared to leave the liner, their home for so many miles. And in the royal barge, they continued across the huge harbour.
I am proud indeed to be at the head of a nation that has achieved so much. Standing at last on Australian soil, on this spot that is the birthplace of the nation, I want to tell you all how happy I am to be amongst you and how much I look forward to my journey through Australia.
It was an estimated 75% of the population who were able to catch a glimpse of the new royal. Monarchist and legal academic Professor David Flint recalls sleeping overnight, aged 16, in a Sydney street with a group of schoolmates so they could see the royal couple.
We slept overnight in Macquarie Street, and I remember seeing them in Macquarie Street. It was an extraordinary time because the overwhelming majority of Australians actually saw her. It was the first visit by a sovereign, and she was received with enormous affection, and the city's all places were decorated. She seemed to stay a very long time. In fact, it went on for a number of months because she went right across Australia, not only the capitals but also in the country.
That first visit cementing a lifelong fascination.
Members of the Senate and members of the House of Representatives, the first section of the Constitution of the Commonwealth of Australia provides that the legislative power of the Commonwealth shall be vested in a federal parliament which shall consist of the Queen, a Senate and a House of Representatives. It is therefore a joy for me today to address you not as a Queen from far away, but as your Queen and as a part of your parliament. It is, I think, fitting that I should, speaking to you today, recall to mind those elements of unity which combine in the fabric of the British Commonwealth.
Afterwards, it certainly rained all right, but nobody budged an inch. If the weather didn't bother the Queen and the Duke, it didn't bother us either.
Adoration followed Australia's head of state, and little changed on 15 subsequent visits, sparking a renewed affection amongst a raft of new generations. But the visit stalled during the late 1990s to avoid heated debate about the future of the monarchy. Prime Minister Paul Keating, one such advocate for Australia to become a republic by the new millennium.
Australia should become a republic by the year 2001. We are all Australians. We share a continent, we share a past, a present and a future, and our head of state should be one of us.
Her next trip was timed well after the 1999 referendum on the Republic, its defeat partly attributed to the Queen's own significance to so many Australians. More than two decades before he led the country as its 29th Prime Minister, Malcolm Turnbull first made a name for himself as chair of the Australian Republican Movement.
The fact of the matter is that the monarchy is an institution that is bust in Australia because it doesn't represent Australia, and it was never intended to represent Australia. It was always intended to be a symbol that represented the real political substance of our position in the British Empire.
But speaking to the ABC on Friday morning, following her death at the age of 96, he became visibly emotional when reflecting on the meeting that he and his wife had had with the monarch during his time as Prime Minister.
She gave us a portrait of herself, the official portrait of herself and Prince Philip, in some boxes, you know, which I'm sure they give to every Prime Minister. And she said, with a wry smile, she said, here you are, you can put them in a cupboard, I suppose. And which was charming and funny. And last night, as we were filled with such dread, because it was obvious that things would turn very bad, I took the portrait of the Queen out and set it up. And we just thought, what an amazing life. What amazing leadership. And it is the end of an era.
David Flint explains her appeal to even the most unlikely of subjects.
Unlike so many in public life, she wasn't in it in any way for the advantages that she would get. I think there's been a decline in Australian public life to the extent that what didn't once happen has happened, and that is that people seem to be more and more going into public life for the advantages that they get out of it. You didn't have that phenomenon once.
But her death hasn't stopped leaders of the Republican movement calling for Australian independence. Within an hour of her passing, the Australian Republican movement released this statement.
Queen Elizabeth respected the self-determination of the Australian people. The Queen backed the rights of Australians to become a fully independent nation during the referendum on an Australian Republic in 1999, saying that she has always made it clear that the future of the monarchy in Australia is an issue for the Australian people and them alone to decide by democratic and constitutional means.
Lindsay Marshall from The Real Republic Australia.
The senior royals, without fail, have always taken the position that the Republic debate in Australia or in any other Commonwealth country is a matter for the people of those nations. It's not about the royal family. They understand that and they respect any decision that any Commonwealth country takes to become a republic. And we've seen that before. The fact is that of the 54 countries that make up the Commonwealth, 34 of them are now republics, and they welcome the royal family to their shores just as we would welcome King Charles or any of the royal family to Australia once we become a republic.
Australia isn't the only nation which has questioned the legitimacy of the royal family. Even in the United Kingdom, support for the monarchy has wavered from time to time, no more so than in the days that followed the August 1997 death of the Queen's own former daughter-in-law, Diana, Princess of Wales. Nick Bryant, who spent over 27 years as a journalist with the BBC, reported from the gates of Buckingham Palace during that dramatic week.
I was outside Buckingham Palace in 1997, and there really was a palpable mood of rebellion. And you'll remember some of the tabloid front pages. Show us you care. Speak to us, Mom. Where is our Queen? She decided in the aftermath of Diana's death to remain in Balmoral rather than come back to Buckingham Palace. And you'll remember also that the decision was made not to fly a flag at half staff at Buckingham Palace. There really was this moment of revolt, at a moment of such high emotion throughout Britain. In those few days, the monarchy definitely wobbled. Now, whether that would have turned into a kind of real drive towards a British Republic, I'm not sure if it reached that point.
However, when the Queen finally did travel down to Buckingham Palace to be with her subjects and deliver an emotional address to the nation, it seemed all was forgiven.
What I say to you now, as your Queen and as a grandmother, I say from my heart. First, I want to pay tribute to Diana myself. She was an exceptional and gifted human being. In good times and bad, she never lost her capacity to smile and laugh, nor to inspire others with her warmth and kindness.
It remains to be seen whether the newly crowned King Charles III will be able to engender the same public support as his mother. His own popularity over the years has proved tumultuous, severely weakened during his very public separation and divorce from Diana, who herself cast doubt over whether he was up to the task of being king.
There was always conflict on that subject with him when we discussed it. And I understood that conflict because it's a very demanding role, being Prince of Wales, but it's equally a more demanding role, being king. And being Prince of Wales produces more freedom now, and being king would be a little bit more suffocating. And because I know the character, I would think that the top job, as I call it, would bring enormous limitations to him. And I don't know whether he could adapt to that.
Living by the old adage of never complain, never explain was perhaps the secret to the unifying popularity that the Queen enjoyed mostly uninterrupted throughout her reign. Nick Bryant again.
Obviously, Queen Elizabeth was a figure of great continuity. A lot of people are remarking on that. But she was also a figure of great transcendence. The United Kingdom really isn't that united at the moment. In Scotland, where she died, there is a drive for independence. Northern Ireland is in a state of political turmoil. Britain is still deeply polarized by the Brexit vote. But throughout all of this, the monarchy has retained this unifying presence, this transcendent presence in a country that is often deeply divided. She was such a unifying figure.
And what's being seen as the end of an era? The death of Queen Elizabeth II will no doubt have far-reaching implications for the monarchy. Tina Quinn, SBS News.